It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Good to see my partner, my buddy, Mike Ward, back in studio from his travels west.
Yes, sir. Good to see you, Sean.
We'll talk about that also. Yeah, marine forecast-wise, too. Well, we didn't get the hurricane here, but the Gulf did, for sure. I was looking earlier in the week. It was like, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's like 1.3, 1.7. Then it went down. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So I get roughed up out there.
You know, a friend of mine called me like Wednesday night, and we was talking. He said, "Man, I'm thinking about going fishing Friday. You want to go?" I said, "Man, I can't. I got to go up to the hunting camp. Yeah. I got a bunch of stuff to do up
there." But you
there.
Have fun.
But no, but I wasn't even thinking. Didn't even think about the hurricane. He was pulling my leg, but it just didn't even cross my mind that the hurricane was coming, because I'm thinking about it. I got to go to the hunting camp, you know?
Yeah, you're all in Kansas time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so roughed up out there. Of course, you know, for us, after a storm like that, fishing seems to get better. You know, since you and I have done the show, a friend of ours in common and I went fishing and went way down the hill, 50-something miles out for us.
But yeah.
The water picking up, this would have been a couple, tomorrow will be 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we weren't, I'd say 18, 20 miles out. We picked up the next color. Some people call it navy blue, then it gets gray. It's the color before the cobalt. It's not cobalt.
It's right.
Not,
it's real pretty blue.
But it's that real pretty blue water.
Right.
And it was in probably 18 miles.
Yeah.
Maybe even closer when we picked that up. We had flying fish all day, everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking about it, 20 miles, 30 miles, 35 miles. Not just like, oh, we just saw some. It was constant.
Well, I had a friend of mine tell me he was fishing the rigs right out of Dolphin Island in the bay. The first rig you come to right there, he said, you can see 10, 12, 15 foot down. He said the water was just absolutely crystal clear just the other day.
Now, we hope this doesn't get messed up with runoff coming down the Alabama, because some of this rain for the storm put water in the basin there. Hope not, because a lot of us are looking at the causeway, too, and thinking about fall fishing on the causeway. Did get to go up last week, and just kind of looking around, just a little scouting. We're just having fun.
Yeah,
but did see shrimp. Didn't really try to catch any trout. Caught catfish and bull croakers and, you know, reds and that kind of stuff. But didn't really search out the trout yet. But the shrimp are there.
The shrimpers are doing real well in the bay right now.
Well, to give you the pro tip here, when you see the bait shrimpers just paralleling the Alabama, you go back and forth for the battleship.
Yep.
And that run, that tells you something.
Yep. They're catching, they're doing real good, and they're good size. They're 20, 25 count right now. So I'm not sure, are they going up the river?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what they're doing right now? They're going up the river. Okay.
And they have been for a while, but yeah, they're going up the river. You know, we did a whole show, we'll do a show on this again.
I remember that,
too. Yeah.
I just couldn't remember, but I thought now they're going up the
river.
That's right. And then in
then when
November,
it gets cold, when it gets cold and fresh water enough, they'll drop back out.
Right.
Yeah, so there. I mean, that's, and the fishing, trout fishing has been, you know, a couple, 3 weeks ago, told you I was fishing middle part of the bay, coming out of Dog River, fishing some of the structure out there, having pretty decent trips.
Yeah.
And talked to Captain Bobby this last week on Thursday. He talked about had good trips. They had like a, you know, they do a multi-boat, like there's a bunch of them work together. I think they had seven boats, something like that, multi-boat trip. And he said everybody, because there's always somebody might just not be on them, every boat had a great day, middle of the bay.
Man,
so
that's good news.
So the fish are, the trout are there. There's been a bunch of white trout, but these are speckled trout were there as well. But yeah, and I went up on, it was real pretty. Same thing. I went up as far north of Gravine.
Yeah.
And water looked good there. And like I said, the fun of living where we do, I mean, it's all kind of normal for us. But if somebody was in Birmingham hearing us, in fact, I can sit at one spot on an anchor and catch redfish and catfish at the same time.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about saltwater catfish. I'm talking about, you know, channel cats and blue cats. So it's a good thing.
Bass, brim.
Yep.
Flounder.
Makes it great.
It does.
I didn't get, I thought I was going to catch flounder. We did not catch any flounder. And I didn't set my crab nets out.
Yeah.
So just so nobody gets confused, you can't run crab traps north of the Bayway Causeway.
Right.
Okay, that's why you always see those trap buoys all as far north as they can get.
That's right.
But not north of there. But you can use, you know, just a hook, and I mean, just a line with a piece of bait and a dip right. net.
You can use trot line.
Trot line with bait, right, to pick them up off there. You can use crab baskets I'm using.
Yep.
You put the basket on there, the bait's in there, they get in there, you pull up the basket.
Yeah, a round basket. Yep. It's a net.
Yeah, it's a net with half the metal rings. And,
right.
Mm-hmm. And crabs crawl in there, and you go by and check. And it's kind of fun.
Sure it is.
You know, it's something that if you have somebody in your family that not going to sit and wait for a long time for a bite, but it's a fun thing. You don't have to be quiet. You can just goof around. You can go check your, you know, go check the trot line, go check the nets, and catch some crabs.
So you didn't use them?
Did not, no. Got to catch those catfish, and so I just go right around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, I'd left the catfish alone. I know. Got the crabs.
I know how you're going to be. So, yeah, fishing-wise, it does obviously nothing but get better, but I am wondering about the rainfall coming down the Alabama system. Hopefully, it won't be, knock on wood, enough to mess anything up down here. But, water clarity was real good, and I can imagine after the angle of Helene coming into the Gulf, that when things do lay back down out there, we're going to have a lot of pretty water in close.
I would think so. It's blowing out of north right here.
As it comes up the Gulf,
it's pushing all this whole water.
Yeah.
That's right. So you're right. I mean, it should be some really pretty water. Oh, it's just pretty water out there right now.
Yeah.
Beautiful water out there right now. So it can't get much prettier, I don't think.
And obviously, we go back to several shows ago, but, you know, we'll have we still have snapper quota.
Yep.
So right now, nice thing is, for those going offshore, not now, but when it lays back down, you know, snapper's open, trigger's open, amberjack's open.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a...
When does amberjack and trigger go out? Do you know?
I don't know, but it was... I can check that. Listen, by the way, this will give you a chance to plug our favorite app. Do you remember the name of it, Mike?
Fish Rule.
Indeed, Fish Rule. So if you go... I guess we hadn't talked about that in a while, too. It's a free app. If you're an iPhone user, go to the App Store. If you're a Android user, you go to the Google Play. And it's Fish Rules.
Yeah.
And what's neat about it, is it takes, when you open up the app, it figures out, you have to like let it know where you are.
Right.
And it figures out, okay, you're there. What are the regulations there? So not only do you get the federal regs, but you get the whatever state waters. So, you know, here in Alabama, it tells me what I can keep and all that. But then if we would travel to Florida, we went to Louisiana or Texas or something like that, you just open it up and it would adjust it for where you are.
Right. Which is really neat.
Yeah, because I can't hardly, without this, I can't figure out the rules here at home, let alone if I travel. So,
I was busy the other day and somebody in the office asked me, was amberjack and triggerfish open right now? And
they're open.
I didn't have time to look at the app to see I was doing something, but I said, I don't know.
They are open. Here's the thing. It's always that when's the closure going to be? Neither of them have listed when the closing date is, but Triggerfish and Amberjack open. Fish Rules app saves you any trouble there.
Yeah.
Check it out there.
Yep.
All right. Inshore-wise, things do nothing but get better. Plus, you mentioned the bass. We'll have to talk to Captain Wayne Miller here soon. It's a little early, but about a month from now, I mean, it goes from bass fishing on the causeway to bass catching.
He's catching them all the time.
I'm talking about for the rest of us.
Yeah, but he really starts catching them a lot in about 30 days probably.
Yeah.
Well, to get the water down, the water temperature down, probably about another 12, 15 degrees.
Oh, yeah, that'd be – I think if we got 8 or 10, we'd be in business.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to that as well. All right, so we can talk a little more fishing on today's show, but I know a lot of what I want to talk about, number one, getting an update, because I have not. You'll get to hear Mike and I talk like we're on the phone to each other, because I have not talked to you since you got back from Kansas. So,
no.
So, Kansas, you've been showing me – he did show me pictures this morning, y'all, and
– not of keels.
No, but of live bucks that are – I'm not telling anybody – thing they don't know.
No,
my gosh, Kansas.
There's a big deer in Kansas. You know, you go to Missouri, Illinois, Kansas, Iowa, whatever.
Yeah, it's outstanding.
Midwest.
It's not that it's just one. Here's the thing. I'm familiar with, you know, I saw big deer when I was in Kansas bird hunting all those years.
Yeah.
But I wasn't running cameras back then.
Right.
It's not that it's the one-off. It's the numbers of bucks
a lot of bucks,
right? That are true trophies.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of them that are the 135 to 150, 55, somewhere around in there. A lot of those bucks. I mean, you just, when you're flipping through your camera, you just almost don't hardly look at
them. Just,
you
know? Another 140.
Yeah, you know, you just kind of you just flip on by. You're looking for that 165, 170, 180. You know,
but that's what does it. I think is you have that hole out there. Those bucks here that are 105 inches, we're trying to get to 130. Those bucks, instead of it, they're 135, and now you have a lot more of those bucks that the, because not every one of them is going to be a 170 or 180.
No.
But if you have a lot of 130 deer, then if you take half of those or a third of those can make the bigger, then you got a lot more of those. Instead of having one that can make 170,
that's right.
You might have five or six in an area, in a county that can make that.
Yeah, I don't care where you go. They're not all going to be monsters.
Right, we've talked about that on shows. That people think, if I just let them live long enough, and I'm here to tell you, I let them live long enough, and they just all aren't going to be trophies.
That's right. No, they're just not going to be trophies. But like you say, you let enough of them go, enough of them live, and they do in Kansas. I mean, we're hunting a big piece of property up there. I don't know. It's 8 to 10,000 acres property up there, and there's like nine of us hunting. And we can only kill one buck a piece off of that. Now, think about that.
And only if y'all get drawn.
Yeah, and that's only if we get drawn. So this year is only six people getting drawn, and probably not all six are going to kill a deer.
And he's got a lot of up-and-comers and a lot of giants.
Yeah.
Come back, more of that talk with Mike. Also look forward to, it's not going to be too long till getting up a tree and bow hunting here at home. So we've got that to talk about. And teal season ending this weekend as well. Formula looks right for a good teal hunt. We'll talk about that when we come back. All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along with us. Yeah, we were talking during the break, too. I know we mentioned earlier the Hurricane Helene. A little bit about what's going to do, maybe shake things up, get fishing good in the Gulf when it lays down. But also thinking about that area over there and having spent time pretty recently just over there scalloping.
That's right.
If you get past Destin and all that, which I'm not super familiar, I've never been to Destin in my life. I've never been to Destin in my life. Never been there.
You are kidding me.
No, because if I don't, here's my, in this discussion I've had with people, the stuff, if I'm going to leave home, Dolphin Island, right, Mobile Bay, and not go west for fishing, but if I'm going to go east, I'm going to get to somewhere that it's significantly different than where I live. And so you get past Destin, you start getting, because, I like to snorkel and do that. You get clearer water as you go further east and different kind of environment over there. As you start going, Port St. Joe, Apalachicola, get over there to St. Mark's, Carrabelle. It's just different, right? To me, I have nothing against Destin, but I'm like, if I'm going to drive that far, I'm going to drive another hour and a half or two. And so what I was getting at, though, is if you drive in that area, I know so many of y'all have, you get off of I-10, and let's say you're going down those places. There's a little bit of hills relief right when you get off I-10, but you get another 10 miles down the road south, y'all, it is, I mean, it's flat.
It is.
It is flat, flat.
Yeah.
Going down there, here at home, people who don't know our topography, you'll hear, come in with the Weather Channel or whatever, they'll be like, oh, if the storm surge is this, it'll go this far in. You're like, nah, not really, because there's a ridge here. And
that's right.
That, we're not flat. We're not Louisiana. We're not. But that down there, if that water goes up, I mean, see the picture of how far it goes in. But if you get 15 or 20 foot of storm surge,
I can't even imagine that down there.
How far in that is?
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I guess we saw some of it in Katrina on the Mississippi coast, which has got a lot of that flat. You get Diamond Head and all that stuff over there, pretty flat. And storm surge from Katrina went way inland there.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's people that their houses aren't on pylons. They're just sitting on the ground. That's never had any issue with flooding ever in their entire life. They've been there.
Yeah.
They're getting ready to have some
problems. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, just watching that over there. And You know, and we talked about this on the midday show, but if y'all are hearing us on this morning, next week, if you're doing relief efforts with church or community group or whatever, just get in touch with us at the station. The way we can help is we can get the word out if you're, you know, drop off points and those kind of things to help the people down there where we're all on board. All right, so we're talking about Kansas. You're back from Kansas.
And I did not hunt.
You went out there. So Mike drives. Okay, here's the thing. Here's about my friend. He drives. How far is it to drive? How long does it take you?
Well, it's 900 miles. So it's 14 and a half hours.
So he drives 14 and a half hours to work.
Yep.
at the lease out there.
You know, it's funny. There's a boy out there that I've got to meet that's in the club with us, lives up in Lake Martin.
Okay.
And anyway, he was out there on vacation hunting with a muzzleloader.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had an opportunity on a really big one, but it didn't work out for him.
You were showing me that picture of that buck.
You know, about 75 yards, had his muzzleloader on him.
And you can use muzzleloader and bow
now at the same time. And he had the muzzleloader crosshairs on him, 75 yards coming to him. And he said, well, I'm just going to look at him one more time with the binoculars. Let me tell you, don't ever do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as he picked his binoculars up, that deer, and those are big deer, they got long strides.
Mm-hmm.
He just easily walked in the woods. He was coming down beside a bean field in woods right beside it. And he just turned and leisurely walked in the woods. Didn't see him or anything. He was right at the crack of daylight. And anyway, he missed an opportunity on a really, really fine buck. So just don't ever do that. You got your crosshairs on one, and he's coming to you, keep your crosshairs on him.
Yeah.
And be ready to pull the trigger.
Now, this wouldn't have worked because there's a wide open. The picture I saw wide open on one side in the woods. You had a bean field going in the woods. But you might need to bring preach the gospel in Kansas about the blue bucket.
My road hunting technique,
I put the bucket on the road so the deer will stop and look at the bucket.
That's right. Well, we had corn out, you know, so he just thought the deer
well, that's
was
better
coming.
Than a bucket, yeah, unless it's corn in a bucket.
Well, it was does in the corn pile.
So and, does and corn?
Yeah. So he thought for sure that buck was just coming straight on to the
I
corn.
I can't blame him. I'd have thought the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, he's on vacation, and he said he will never go on vacation with me again. I like to work him to death.
to drive a distance, and then this man on vacation to just be put into the labor camp of Mike Ward.
Yeah.
What do y'all do out there? Because it's not like, you know, you're not planting green fields out there. What do you do?
It's the same thing you do here. You're putting feeders out. You're putting stands out. You're trimming limbs. You're trimming bushes. You're, you know, cutting where the grass is, you know, 2 foot tall or 3 foot tall where it's waving. You use a weed eater to cut that down so your camera's not going off every you know, 30 seconds mm-hmm. or whatever. I mean, it's the same thing we do here, just getting ready for the hunt.
You got some more miles in your truck you need to burn? Because I got, you know, we talk about this, and we probably could revisit this on a show. Like, each year I usually do a camera breakdown because I'm such a full, you know, I've been, cellular cameras have been a thing for me. I was an early adopter, and I run a bunch of them. But I've got three up in Pennsylvania where I hunt.
Yep.
And one of them I had set perfectly. It's on the side of a real pretty heavy ridge, but in the mountains, but where the trails are pretty defined because they come up and they switch back across it. And I set it, and it was perfect before I left up there. This has been back in August.
Yeah.
And a squirrel has jumped on this joker. Okay. I guarantee you that's what happened. The squirrel's jumped on. Now it's not looking down the trail. It's looking off somewhere else at an angle that makes you dizzy looking at it. Now I am 1,100 miles away and can't fix that. So if you need to burn some gas, come on.
I got two of them the same way. I've got them all set last week. Everything's perfect. They're on the field. Got them on T-post.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got T-post mount. I went ahead and paid extra to get the T-post mount
mm-hmm.
and got them all set up perfect. Well, I see this deer coming right at my camera looking at it. In the next picture, the camera's off looking at the woods. You know, and another one, basically the same thing. I mean, looking at a soybean field with some corn and all that out in it. And the next picture is one now it's looking at the woods again.
And so, now it's easy when it's.
And here we are. We're, you know, 900 miles away. And what do you do?
Right. When you're 30 miles from your hunting camp, it's not a big deal.
That's right.
When you're 900 miles away, it's a big deal. Listen, I've gone through. And I don't have any feed out, so before anybody asks, but I've lost two antennas now in the last 2 weeks.
From what?
Bears eating the eating the – they've decided – I've had coyote pups do it before, too, eat the antennas on my cutty links, but I've had bears. They don't
– In Mobile or –
Mobile, yeah, here.
Okay, here.
Yeah, here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eating the antennas. Or just bite. One of them they got after. The other one just got bite marks on it, but it's all bent. It looks, you know, kicked off at a 45-degree angle. So I have to make the call to cutty link to get new. I don't know why they want the antenna. It's kind of got that rubberized plastic around it. Maybe it's fun to chew. Like I said, I've had coyote pups. Dude, I had coyote pups do that and eat through the cord that connects my solar to my battery because I run a lot of them on solar panel right into run the camera. They thought that was fun to chew through. I was like, I hope you get a shock.
Yeah. But that is aggravating.
But it's easier because I live on the property and I can go fix it. But yeah, it's a different when you're in Kansas or Pennsylvania.
I don't have as many cameras as you do, but I did buy 12.
Okay. You're moving on up, Mike.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I'm impressed. I'm going to get four more before it's all over with. So I'll have 16.
Now you're talking.
Going. But I mean, you know, you just got them in different places. And what you're doing when you go to Kansas is you're just trying to find where a big buck lives.
And right you now, know, y'all are hunting. Right now, the guys are hunting out there. And like the other, you're hunting food.
That's right.
Because
rut
is not in.
That's right. You're just hunting food right now. They just lost their velvet, so they're hard horns now. At least all of them that I've seen now are hard horns. So you're hunting bait. But what it tells me is just there's a good one around. Even when they're not coming to the bait, it gives me an idea. At least I can go hunt around there and have a chance at this 165 or 180 or whatever it might be.
He's got some giants on camera.
Yeah, you know, so it just gives you some hope that there's some deer there. So the more cameras you have, just like you got, I mean, at your place, man, I wouldn't dare try to use the bathroom at your place.
Mike always asks, hey, can I go to the restroom here? I'm like, oh, yeah,
no,
sure.
No, you go down by right around that corner. I don't have a camera, you know.
You know what's interesting, though, on camera right now for me at home? It's something we've talked about before. I think I brought it up with Chuck Sykes and maybe we'll get the deer coordinator on, the biologist on here. There's something I've seen on my property. I'd love to hear from y'all maybe on the Facebook page if you see this. I was showing you a picture of that buck the other day.
Right. It got nice buck.
Nice buck. Hadn't seen him at all.
Yeah.
Every year I get, while they're getting ready to shed velvet, I get bucks come on my property. I get on camera that I don't then see again.
Yeah.
Maybe we've seen one during the rut, maybe. And it's this movement. I look, and I know this happens out west because going to hunt mule deer out there, I've watched patterns and guys I talked to that these groups of bucks will abandon a canyon they've been in, go to another area as they shed velvet. And I don't know if they feel exposed or whatever, and then they come back to that same canyon, but they leave for that period. I see bucks, and sometimes they're the better bucks I see in a year. I see these bucks show up, and then once the velvet's off, don't see them.
Yeah, and they're
what is about
determining their territory too,
right? You know, I mean, that they
and the
come
bucks
in there.
The bucks start splitting up. Mm-hmm. I've seen that too. Where I mean, we were getting pictures when they were in velvet. There'd be sometimes six or eight.
Sure.
So
and I still have those.
I got
ones I see regular. I mean, I know them. You know, I've been watching them forever.
Right.
But then I get this new group of bucks. It's happens. I think it happens every year that I can remember. We'll get these bucks on camera, and they're in there, and then by the time November comes, or sometime in between there, they never see them again.
Yeah. I know we're getting ready to go to a commercial break, but we'll talk when we come back.
You got a theory?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. This is good because, welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Professor Ward's going to help me here.
Well, I don't know.
No, I want it because I don't know, I'd love to hear from y'all if anybody has this experience who got to run cameras now. Difference is a lot of people, although they'd be running them for bow season, but I run cameras 52 weeks a year. Yeah,
year round.
And I've seen this quite a few times. I got the regular knuckleheads, the bucks that, you know, you see all the time, and I don't feed this time of year, so I'm not looking at a feed pile. I'm just looking at trails and crossings and all
that. But you do have food out. I mean, you have food, not corn and all that stuff, but you got food.
Oh, in my woods, yeah.
Yeah, but don't you have some stuff planted?
Oh yeah, I got that, but I got a, I guess planted now. Yeah, down by the house. In the pastures by the house, I got some stuff planted. But I'm talking about, I got food in the woods because the forbs. Not to go complete nerd on y'all, but you know I burn and do all that, and
right.
So you get a pretty good flush of forbs coming in this time of year. So flowers,
right,
coming in this time of year, they will flat graze those babies down.
Yeah.
So they definitely eating those, and that may be part of this explanation. But we're talking about is I got my regular deer, but it's like every year this time of year, September, early September, going into a little bit in October, I get, and sometimes it's the better bucks I see in a year. I got bucks on me, and then they disappear.
Well, I think maybe,
and they're it's always while they're in velvet or just shedding.
Yeah. But maybe what's happening, John, is a lot of people like you. I don't want to put corn out or
right.
start. I don't care anything about deer being in velvet and looking at deer in velvet. I personally don't care about that.
Right.
And I'm not getting ready to hunt right now. I mean, we still got. I'm not bow hunting on my place right. here in Alabama, so I'm waiting till mid October or so before I even put cameras out.
Yeah, but were those people feed? But were they feeding in June, July? And if they're feeding protein, they should have been feeding in April, May, June. But what did they, I mean, if they're not feeding at all and I'm not feeding at all, why do they show up on me when they're in velvet and then disappear?
I don't know, but maybe they're just, maybe in October,
they start feeding again. Yeah.
And then they leave you.
And I'll start feeding right there going into Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll start feeding.
Yeah. But that's late October.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Maybe I'll feed early.
And it could be, because I know in Kansas, we had one spot we was feeding. And I'm telling you, we had so many bucks coming to it. It was unbelievable. You know, there'd be a group of six or eight come, and then there'd be two or three, and then it'd be another two or three. And, I mean, just a bunch of different bucks come to this spot. And then all of a sudden, it's like, what happened to all those deer?
Mm-hmm.
They're gone. Just an occasional buck comes now.
Right.
But what happened was they're cutting corn.
All that fresh corn laying on the ground.
They're cutting corn now. So all these cornfields up there, the deer are flooding to it. And they're going to be getting ready to cut soybeans probably within the next – some places they might be getting ready to start now. But in the next 30 to 45 days, they're going to be cutting soybeans. And that's going to be another game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're living in the soybeans right now. I mean, they're literally – in the cornfields.
Yeah.
A lot of them are living in that right now. And when they cut all that – everything changes. I mean, the whole world changes up there
mm-hmm.
because you got soybean fields, corn fields. You can't see anything. It's so thick, you can't see the woods hardly And then when they cut all
open.
That, you can see for a mile, you know. So everything's getting ready to change up there.
Yeah, it's, it shuffles them around. Then you put that where you're hunting right into the rut coming here at the beginning of November.
That's right, yeah. So, food.
Absolutely.
I mean, all they live for is besides rut.
The other thing?
For about 15 days.
Yeah. But, for me, I don't know. I'll keep studying this because we I pay attention to the food we got on the place. I spend most of my, if I get home in time before it's dark from this radio station, I spend my time in the woods looking what's up. So I don't know if they have more. I got plenty of forbs now, but I probably had those also end of July and August. So I don't know. It's a mystery. We'll find out. Maybe I can keep them on there. Also, speaking of this, bow season right around the corner. And quick reminder, too, we've talked about this in the past. It's bucks only for us in, what are we, Zone B? I think we're Zone B.
Yeah.
First 10 days. So reminder there. And I think the rut was pretty good. Most of my fawns look about the same size. So I feel good about that.
Yeah.
That they were, dropped early enough. But, I've talked about this so many times that a doe can come out and you say, a dry doe, maiden doe, no fawn. Maybe not.
That's right.
And that's the point of that 10 days. And I would even argue, if you're trying to do the best, I would wait on into November, shoot those, because that fawn may be back in the woods and you shoot that doe, you've killed that fawn too.
That's right. Yeah. So I agree with you. You just need to be careful. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that the first 10 days you can't kill a doe during bow season.
Yeah.
I mean, people just don't think about that. They think, well, I can shoot a doe anytime.
Well, and remember the logic. And remember the logic behind it is what got us to move to closing not the end of January but February 10th was the mean rut, the spike of the rut, and realizing that the rut came in later in a lot of areas in Zone B, so they moved it later. Well, okay, so that is true. So therefore, those does aren't bred till later. The fawns drop later. So they're still needing mama big time.
That's right.
Maybe where, you know, a deer that rutted in November, well, that fawn's okay by October. But a deer that rutted in February or March, that fawn's way behind and still needs mama in October.
Every year, I see spotted fawns in January.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, you're
in the black belt.
I'm in the black belt. Every year, I see spotted fawns in January.
You know what the deer biologist says? You got too many does, Mr. Ward.
Well, I may have.
Yeah.
I probably do.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Yeah. I just don't shoot them. I don't eat
venison, right, yeah.
I just don't care for it. Now, if you cooked it, I came over to your house, yeah, and you had it, I'd eat it.
Which is pretty much what you eat at my house, yes.
Yeah, but my wife
unless
won't
it's
cook
fish
it,
or
and
ducks.
I'm not going to fool with it, so I just don't
right.
So I'm not going
to
shoot
Yeah, you're
those.
There to hunt bucks.
Yeah, I'm just there to shoot bucks, yeah,
right,
which I hadn't killed in a very long time.
I think you're going to, I think, I don't know what you're going to do in Alabama this year. I feel you, but I think you're going to get one of these monsters in Kansas. I'm feeling it.
Well, Yeah, I hope so. I mean, they're there to be killed, so and I'm going to spend some time out there. I'm going to spend more time out there probably hunting than I do in Alabama. I'm sure I am.
I want to also talk about with bow season coming up, something that you gave me a crash course in. I mean, I'm familiar with them. It's not like I don't know what they are, but I've never been a crossbow hunter.
Right.
And last year or year before when you first got a crossbow, was it 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
2 years ago. Y'all, and then we talked a couple weeks ago about the parallax sighting where, you know, it takes into account it figures out the range and puts the crosshairs where it's supposed to be.
That's right.
These are pretty awesome machines here. I've studied up since you and I talked.
Yeah, Burris makes it, and also Garmin makes one. Burris is what I've got one for my grandson, Dylan,
mm-hmm,
on his compound bow. Now, I haven't gotten mine yet for the crossbow. They ran out of them at the factory, and I've been talking to the boy at the factory, and they're supposed to come in yesterday. I hadn't checked with him to see. But anyway, I should be getting mine for my crossbow here soon. But it is great. I mean, you see a deer out there, and you don't know whether he's 30 yards, 40 yards, 45 yards, where you just throw your bow up.
Your range finder and your sight are incorporated into one unit here. Instead of having to range, put down the range finder, get the right selection on this.
And the deer's moving.
Yeah.
You know, here you can pull your bow out.
You do with the bow,
you pull your arrow back, be ready. And as soon as you get an opportunity, you push a button and it tells you 33 yards. And it tells you exactly where to put your crosshair on the deer. So, I mean, it takes the guesswork out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's awesome. I think it's going to help not wound as mm-hmm many deer. It should.
Absolutely.
It should help that.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, I'll take all the help I can get not to wound a deer.
Yeah, I mean, it's real interesting to me because, like, you know, you and I are, like, bookends on this because I shoot a wooden longbow.
Yeah.
You know, but also there are some years this might be one of them with stuff I got going on that I won't bow hunt if I don't. I have to shoot so much to feel. I mean, I'm a good instinctive shooter, but there's a difference between, you know, I have to be really on form before I'll bow hunt with it.
That's right.
I got to have time way before bow season. And I grew up shooting compound bows. I've shot every kind of bow. I have nothing against wheel bows. I'm probably going to get another one. But it's something that it takes even maybe more. It takes more practice than shooting a compound.
Well, absolutely it does.
And as time's gone on, decades gone on, and less time out there, I got to tell you, something like these crossbows you're shooting that, you still need to shoot them and know what you're doing, but you don't have to go shoot every day.
That's right. Well, the other thing, too, is, I mean, my shoulder, I've got a shoulder that, it's not great, my right shoulder, and it hurts a little bit when I pull a compound bow back. And the last thing you want is be in a tree and go to pull back and get to hurting. So, mm-hmm, you know, for me, the compound bow just makes sense. I've always used recurve bows I mean, compound bows.
But the crossbow, you're saying, makes sense now.
Yeah, it makes sense for me now. So that's what I went with.
And there, I mean, it's amazing. Like I said, since you started talking about them more and I started studying, these things are amazingly efficient.
Oh, they are. I mean, you can shoot a deer, they say, up to 100 yards with a crossbow.
Which to me is like anything, just cut it in half. So, I mean, I always talk about that with TSS.
Yeah.
Right? So we both shoot TSS. Turkey hunting, for me, what it did is I actually went down in gauge size. You know, I shoot.
Me too. Yeah, went from a 12 gauge to a 20 gauge. Yeah.
So now I'm just carrying something lighter. You can shoot a turkey way out there. I don't want to. I want to get them closer. But the same thing here, if I know that crossbow can deliver at 100 yards, then I feel good at 50.
50, 60 yards, you get it done. Really good. And that's what, me too.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I'm going to shoot one.
But they can. But that's the fact that they can is not, doesn't mean I'm going to try to shoot 100 yards. It would just make me feel like so confident
that's
at
right.
50 or 60.
50, 60 yards, he's dead.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm excited about shooting a compound bow.
You're going to get me to add something else to the arsenal here.
Yeah.
Done in my feather fletchings and my wood bows.
You need to spend money.
Yeah, right. All right. Keep it up, Ward. Keep it up. All right. Coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. By the way, too, we should have celebrated this at the beginning of the show, but let me celebrate today. Today is the 52nd annual National Hunting and Fishing Day.
Didn't know that.
Yeah, well, there you go. So that means today we hunt and fish.
We hunt free.
Well, it says this thing on the Facebook page for Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. Of course, it's how the state works. Got a picture of Governor Ivey signing something here. It says Saturday, 52nd annual National Hunting and Fishing Day. Governor Kay Ivey signed a proclamation.
Huh, big time.
I mean, he's got to have a fancy turkey feather quill pen. Signed a proclamation celebrating this date, which is meant to highlight the vital role that hunting, fishing, and shooting sports play in conservation efforts in the United States. Here's what she wrote. I'm not going to do my Ivy voice. I take great pride in honoring our hunters and anglers with this proclamation. The abundant fish and wildlife we enjoy today in Alabama would not be possible without hunters and anglers. I thank them for their continued support for conservation and their stewardship of public lands. End quote. So there you go.
You have a fishing day, and anybody can go fishing for free that day. You don't have to have a license.
That's in June usually, I think.
But yeah, I think so. But anyway, is that the way it is with the hunting?
I did not read that. No, I do not think it is. I think it's just proclamation stuff.
No,
fancy
no
government stuff.
Yeah, it makes no difference to me. You, we got a license now, but it would make a difference. Mm-hmm. Somebody that don't have a license.
Yeah, well, somebody today could be out. But then, no, you do. Yeah. It does not say you don't have to have a license.
Well, and what you going to hunt right now anyway?
Doves and teal?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear the reports here, and hopefully I'll be adding mine to the mix as well. The last weekend of blue-wing teal season, so hopefully we'll have some good reports by next week on that.
Have you been?
Not been. But I'm going to go tomorrow. We're going to get it done. We're going to get it done. Last day. Coming under the wire. Speaking of birds, too, I don't know why I do this. I do this because it was Wednesday that people found out about sandhill crane, if you got tags or not. And my phone was ringing. It was funny. I was over at WKRG on Wednesday doing a thing for St. Jude, which big shout out to Webb Jackson and Joy Life on the Gulf Coast. St. Jude, a thing we involve ourselves with a lot here, and I believe so much in what they do. But I was doing a thing over there. My phone's ringing. I'm on TV. You turn your ringers off and you're sitting there. And it's a bunch of other people got drawn for crane tags going, where do we go? Where do we go? So listen, you can tell this is a new thing in the state when the guy that went 1 year.
Yeah, they want to know where to go.
I'm now like the expert in it. I'm like, y'all, I just went the one time.
Yeah.
But I got drawn again.
You did?
I did. So I've been working. I said, before I tell y'all anything, I'm working to lock in where I'm hunting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got
done. So now you're going to have some buddies wanting to go with you.
Yeah. Yes. And we'll see. Yeah. Everybody was my buddy yesterday when they're like, hey, man, how do you do it? I'm like, guys, I really don't know. I went to this place. We got in a pit blind. The cranes flew over and I shot them. That's as much as
sounds
I know
pretty
about
simple
that.
To me.
Yeah, real simple. But yeah, I'm excited about doing that again.
Yeah.
So those are out of Those are out. Those. So if you didn't, if you put in for the lottery and you didn't hear,
Yep. So you would have heard Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Okay.
Check your emails.
Yeah,
if you haven't, for somebody that doesn't check.
You've drawn 2 years in a row, and you've been trying to get
alligator tags since 1974.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said something to a friend of ours in common the other on Wednesday. I said, "Well, hell, I can't get drawn for a gator tag at home. I've only guided, you know, seven different hunters over the years to gators and done all this stuff, and I can't get my own tag.
Yeah,
but I can get 2 years of sandhill crane, which I love. I'm fired up.
Hey, that's great. Absolutely.
Which I reminder too. Start looking now. Some of the hunts are open, but I guess in this next month, you'll go to OutdoorAlabama.com for the special opportunity areas, the SOAs. Those hunts, putting your name in for the hunts at Portland Landing, Cedar Creek, Uchi, I'm missing some of them here, Stimson Reserve. These hunts, the lotteries will be up for those. So I can't use lottery in the state of Alabama. The chance to be drawn.
There you go.
Which is so funny how people are in the state. You can't say lottery. Or whatever it is. You put your name in there and you might get drawn.
Yeah.
Whatever that thing is.
And when? How long do you have?
They should be open. I have not checked it as of now. They weren't as of Wednesday when I went on, because you have to go to the same page to validate that you want your crane permits. Those hunts were not live yet. But it could happen. I would say, I think I remember it usually happened in October. So checking that.
They give you how long to?
It's a couple weeks, I think, once it opens. Yeah, and it's one of these where you put in. You'll spend some time on the computer because you got to say what weekend, they'll have like 2 and 3 day windows.
Yeah.
Which ones do you want? That doesn't mean which one you'll get, but you put the ones you want. Don't put in for something with, if you got to go to grandma's house, that way you don't put that in, or you're going to be traveling.
Yeah.
You find the times you can be available. But we've talked about them for years. It's hats off to the folks, Chuck and Keith and everybody with Wildlife and Freshwater Fisheries. The experience you get on these special opportunity areas is better than you probably would get in a hunting lease.
Yeah.
They're prime properties, low pressure, great management going on the deer.
So. And I know you've been, but I've talked to several friends that have done that, and they loved it. They're just like you. They sign up for it every year.
I always fear to say anything, but I'm going to try to be honest with you all instead of being selfish.
Yeah.
Got drawn second year maybe of the SOA at Cedar Creek for a turkey hunt, and we're standing there. First light came, a buddy and I are hunting, and I think they weren't all in our – they give you zones. Like you're in a hunting camp. You sign out for – and they were like 800-acre blocks. They had – for turkey hunters, they broken this
– That's a lot.
Broken up – yeah, maybe 600 or 800, something like that, that you got – that was your unit. You have a map and that you – but so all the turkeys weren't in that one unit, but we had heard – I think in 5 minutes after daylight, we heard 16 different gobblers.
That's a bunch of gobblers.
I mean, it was
yeah,
it was stellar. So, yeah. And I don't know what it's the turkey hunt's like there, but I know the report's out. I've not been drawn for the deer hunts yet, but I have friends that have and have had. I mean, Portland Landing. If y'all like me, you should go to Mike Ward's store when you're kids and ride your bicycle up there and rent the VHS tapes of Mossy Oak in the early days. That's where they were hunting.
That's right.
And I mean, I used to watch those things. I'm like, man, if I could ever be in a place like that, you can.
And back then, they killed some monsters. Yeah.
At Portland. So that's one of the places you can hunt. So if you're, even if you had somewhere to hunt, but you just wanted to do it for the nostalgia, like me, who used to watch those VHS tapes, Portland Landing's one of them. You get to hunt there if you get drawn.
And the state does a great job managing it for good deer.
They're
planting it. They plant it for,
antler restrictions, all that. So you got a chance at a monster. Good stuff. We'll do it all again next week. This is FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Check us out online. You can check the podcast out by going to our website or anywhere you get your podcast. Also, drop some comments on the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.